Hey everybody, it's Sunny. This episode that you're listening to on the free iTunes feed is about No Time to Die. You got to sign up for the Patreon if you want to listen to our Squid Game bonus episodes. Those are going to live there forever. But you should also sign up because we're going to be talking about Dune this week. The Dune episode, that'll drop on Friday. Big news, sequel greenlit. So anyway, that episode will be in this feed in a couple weeks. But if you want to stay up to date on what's happening, got to go. Listen to there at patreonsubbeacon.com. Again, exclusive Squid Game episodes. People love Squid Game. Millions upon millions of people watching. If you're not watching, you're missing out. You won't be able to follow the culture. So anyway, go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. It's as little as a dollar a month, and as much as $1 million a month. You could do that if you're a billionaire. You want to keep Vic rolling in gout medicine for the rest of his life. Just sign up over there, and give us all your money. All right, I'll let you listen to this episode now. Again, No Time to Die, fun movie. Everyone loves Ana de Armas, so watch that. Listen to this. See you over at the Patreon.
James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, there'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan Velas and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. You never know with all these various shortages, it's like never too early to order your Christmas presents of mugs, t-shirts, headache shirts, whatever those are. Now's the time. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
I had a moment, a little show and tell. I had the kids by myself this past weekend, which means, of course, a trip to the Lego store.
I was going to say, there's all sorts of opportunities for fun things.
And so, Daddy got something.
Uh-oh. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to blow
Aston
the microphone.
Martin?
That is.
Hold on, let me pull back for the
I
show
see
and tell.
The scale. I need scale.
This is massive. The gigantic James Bond Aston Martin, and it is awesome.
Is it tricked out? So it's like
it's so tricked
it's
out.
It's not just like the exterior model, but it's got.
Okay, let me show you the driver's side door. You open the door,
I see,
and then it has a secret compartment with the special red phone that goes right to M. There's a stick shift inside, and if you pull the stick shift, okay, so right now you have headlights, machine guns, headlights,
machine guns. Oh, yeah. Is it, I can't tell, is it single barrel or is it like a Gatling thing? What's going on?
Gatling.
Really?
Gatling. And then in the back, there's an ejector seat, the license plates, spinner, multiple license plates.
Use your fancy iPhone to take some pictures that we can put in
that. Was great on my iPhone SE.
And then there is an ejection seat for the passenger seat.
No. Come on.
Look at this. So
it folds back.
The roof folds back, and then, and literally this, if I were to actually, it's going to fly everywhere. So just get ready, okay?
Uh-huh.
Are you ready?
All right, this is like real with pieces all stuck together.
This is real with pieces. Hold on.
Yeah. This is really exciting for the show.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
And
the listeners are loving this. Hold on.
You know what? If we had Facebook Live with Hannah, this thing would kill. All
okay.
Right, ready?
Uh-huh. Okay. For our listeners, the seat came out.
Seat really flew out from like 12 inches in the air.
Are there pegs
the
in the seat? Because who could you sit on there? Like the actual figures are too small now for that.
Yes. This is larger than minifig scale. Larger than me. It's fantastic.
Fit somebody.
It is that's fantastic. That's so I was
very
primed
cool.
for James Bond, and it was awesome. One problem. I discovered, as I was on step 258, that I had made a slight mistake somewhere early in the build. How early? Step 52. And this mistake was a misalignment of a technical piece way down to the guts of it, which allowed the ejector seat to fly up like this. Now, I had two choices. I could say, how many times in my entire life am I going to make the ejector seat fly up? Mm-hmm. Let's just finish this build and move on with my life. But then I would always know that down in the guts, there was a thing which wasn't put into the technic piece the right way. So what I could do is be an insane person and take it apart and go back to step 52.
If only some listener who worked at Bentley was listening to this episode, they'd invite you to become one of their workers.
I will let you decide
by hand
which course of action I chose.
The latter.
Well, you obviously fixed it since the ejector seat works. I mean, you spoiled this by showing us the ejector seat working.
I think it's very cool. I think it's how long did it take?
Why would you? What's even the point of having the Lego James Bond car if the ejector seat doesn't work?
Right. Well, there you go.
I mean, honestly, even if you told me I was never allowed to use it, if you told me, look, you are not. If you use it, the dude with the square face is going to come over and shoot you in the head. Then the Squid Game, the square mask guy. Then I would still say, I have to fix it because I can't know that it's broken inside.
Yeah. You know what? You know it in your heart. Yeah. There you go. Congratulations. How long did it take?
Who could say? You know, I mean, when you're alone with four
aren't
children.
Aren't we all broken inside?
When you're alone with four children, the hours just fly by.
It's just one day.
Yeah. So it, it felt like it took 10 minutes.
And it's like wheels. Are they like that rubbery?
And they're huge, big.
That's
exciting. and the they've got the special.
I'll look it underneath.
If you look at the you see, you know, the little these things come out.
Oh yes,
the little spikes on the hubcap. The hubcap spikes to shred tires.
Yes,
Spy Hunter style.
I would say there's only a few cars that could do that. The Spy Hunter car, the Aston Martin, and the one from Greece.
Yeah.
That.
There's. I only showed you like half the stuff. There's so much more.
What else? The chariot from Gladiator.
And the chariot, which it split. Ironically, split the woman who was actually driving it originally.
Did you guys see that that Ridley Scott said that a Gladiator 2 is in the works?
So I saw briefly this, Sonny, and I thought, well, we did see the kid in Glass.
That's
so
true. He could be back. No, I would assume. I mean, look, there's a lot of like Roman history you can play with. There's a lot of like Roman Empire stuff that you can do. So I would assume it's not strictly speaking a like the continued adventures of Maximus.
He's dead in Joaquin Phoenix. So, you know, you'd have to replace it. And it would be, you know what it would be? It would be an explanation of how come the Republic did not last. Because, as you know, they rewrote history. They retconned the Roman Empire.
I told you guys. I must have told you guys this story at some point in the 700 years we've been doing this show. But the... when I was in college, I had my favorite professor, Professor John London, Ted London, John E. London, Ted London.
Is that the occasional standard contributor?
J.E. London.
Yes.
And reader of the Free Beacon. I don't think he listens to the Sub Beacon. He is a reader of the Free Beacon. He would send me complaints when the stories wouldn't load on his computer, which is understandable.
Yeah, understandable.
Understandable. But when I was in his he had like a Roman history class, and there was in one of the exams, there was like a half point extra credit question that was like, name five things that were wrong with Gladiator.
Oh, that's great.
I listed like 10, the last of them being they restored the Republic in like all caps.
Yes.
You know,
you were like,
point.
So you were Sonny even then.
I'm sorry. This is a college course. Yeah, where there is extra credit.
This is we've definitely told this story
before. University of Virginia, JVL.
You've had this exact reaction.
Did you fill it out with crayons?
I don't remember this.
Did you have to print just your first name on the top of the page when you
Again, it was like one half of 1 point. It was not like a bump your grade up.
Wait, they didn't have that at Hopkins. They didn't have like bonus questions.
What was that class curved to, Sonny?
No, there was no curve. We don't curve things in the political sciences. It's just you get the grade you get.
What?
I don't even know how that would work. You're just writing essays.
It's very simple.
Answering questions.
You grade every essay with a number, and then you plot those numbers in a distribution, and 70% of them are C's, 5% of them are A's, 10% are B's, and then 30% fail.
Oh, yeah.
That's how grades are given out in college at the university.
That is not how grades are given out in college at any university anymore. There's no class, there's no school in this nation where 70% of kids are getting C's in their classes.
I can't believe that that's true.
I assume there is probably a school somewhere, but you do understand that like everybody graduates from Harvard with like a 3.9, right?
Well, right.
Yeah.
As they really, should, because they got into
except
Harvard.
Except for Harvey Mansfield's class, right? That was the story.
But he went and gave two grades, remember? So he finally caved to the curve and gave people two grades. So he'd give them the real grade, and then he'd give them his, like, what I actually think about you grade. And so like, everybody would get an A, and then he'd tell you, actually, you suck. You are a C minus. You have an A in your transcript, but you're a C minus.
I remember taking an entry course at Georgetown. It was Western Civilization with Professor Dunkley, and it's the course where everybody shows. I mean, it's the course that everyone has to take, and you fill up an auditorium, and it's packed. You know, so everybody's there, and there was a curve for that, obviously, because there's a million students there.
Yeah.
And the curve was, you know, I mean, the bulk of students are going to get, I think, a B in Western Civ, and I remember not being familiar with this at the time, and I poured almost all of my resources because I loved history in high school. I did great in history, and I poured all of my resources and energy and time, which was not a lot considering, you know, my social schedule, into Western Civ. And at the end, and at the expense of a lot of other courses, like in microeconomics, which I did not do well in, and at the end, I still got a B. Like, no matter how hard I worked, I remember still getting that B. And I remember years later talking to Kate about it because she was in the same class. And I said, wasn't that ridiculous because of the huge curve? Yeah, because I got a B. What do you get? She goes, oh, no, I got an A.
Victorino.
Yes, JVL.
The things I had to do to get to a B.
To get to a B, yeah.
I don't tell.
I can't even. It was like Squid
Sacrifices.
Game. I mean, it was, you know, like, it was the tug of war. And and the things I had to do just to get, and I didn't often get to the Bs. The
you're
Bs like, were the my giant triumphs when
you're
I would
like
get
Sun
to the
Woo
B minus.
The marbles. You're just gonna outsmart. You're gonna outsmart the poor Pakistani guy.
I got a report card. I got a semester of scores that were almost entirely Bs and B pluses 1 year. And my advisor, one Professor Lendon, looked at me and he said, you know, In you're in history and poli sci, those are your majors, and you've got some basic requirements here. But the only time somebody should have this many B's on their report card or whatever it was called, your fucking transcript. The only time somebody should have this many B's on their transcript is if they have a drinking problem or a love problem. Which do you have?
Look at
and I was like,
okay, JVL,
I was like,
control
I was
yourself.
Like, well, both. You're two for two there, Professor Lendon. So no, it's mostly drinking though. He's like, yeah, that makes sense.
So. Vic, tell us about your new podcast.
Our friend, our good friend Mary Catherine Hamm has a new podcast called Getting Hammered, and she was asked about if she wanted somebody to sort of be her, you know, sort of co-host, and she thought of me, or at least she claims that I was the first one she turned to. So I was very honored to be asked for that, and And we started it. It has a very much of a morning vibe to it, I would say. Like, if that's like a morning show.
Morning zoo vibe?
Morning zoo, morning show. I mean, it's light news versus like Cinemax After Dark, which is like this show. So, I mean, for me, if she's Howard Stern, then I'm Robin Quivers. That's the way I think about it. Or if she's, let's see here, if she's Rush Limbaugh, Bo Snerdly, you know. But no, the thing that I thought about most, for me personally, was, do you remember John Melendez? Do you remember John Melendez?
Stuttering John.
Yes, sure. Stuttering John. And do you remember suddenly he appeared on The Tonight Show as Jay Leno as the announcer? And it was an entirely different person, like personality. He looked, I remember forgetting that that was the same person at the time, because he was so, he's just a family friendly, all smiles, everything's great. And then on Howard Stern, it's just as raw as you can imagine. So that's
was
how
he
I feel
banned,
myself.
Was he banned from Howard Stern after that? Was he ever that's allowed back good, on the show?
Because you mean after he did Jay Leno?
After he did Jay Leno. Because I remember there being some question. I remember there being some controversy there. I remember there, I wasn't 100% sure if it was a bit at the time, if Howard Stern was like fake angry or if he was actually angry. But like, I remember Howard Stern like being like, you can never return to my hallowed halls.
Right, for having work with somebody who I can't imagine. I don't know. I mean, now Howard Stern is a different person also. So,
it was not like,
I mean?
It was not like if Vic did better and got a show with Mary Catherine Hamm, star of The View and other programs, that JVL and I would be like, good job, man. Congrats. We're very excited for you. I hope you have a great career ahead of you. Paul Crookston will do a very good job filling in for you.
He would.
You're dead right. to us.
Right.
So
hold on. So Victorine, can you fill in some of the blanks here for me?
Sure.
What is the show about? I thought it was a drinking show.
It's just a play on word getting hammered. She was actually concerned that people would have a different connotation of getting hammered. The way I always giggle at the phrase, you know, getting my cavity filled. You know, I mean, but I said no. It's strictly people will think it's drinking themed, whatever. Okay. But you know, I said it's just a light.
It's a show called Getting Hammered with you on it.
I know. So people think that. So I may have to drink on the show just to live up to that.
It's not like the show is called Hammering Away. See, now that I would be like, okay.
Oh.
I could see a double entendre there.
Oh, yeah, Hammering Away. Yeah.
But getting hammered is very clearly a drinking.
Yeah, so there's like a martini on the thing there. And it's sort of a way to either, at the end of your day, you want to take the edge off, listen to some of Mary Catherine's thoughts on the news and funny pop cultural stories, and of course how we're doing, etc. No movies, no TV, nothing like that. And also, or you know, a way to start your day with something light and easy again. So, I mean, if you think
is it an afternoon show or a morning show? Those are two different shows.
Well, you can tune in anytime, Sonny. It goes up.
No,
early
but I'm saying,
morning.
Are you talking about? So you tape it at night and it goes up in the morning.
No. So we tape it on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m., and it goes up the next morning on Wednesdays and Fridays.
A Wednesday and Friday show.
It's
tape in the morning.
Yeah.
But there's no drinking?
Well,
you're taping it at night.
Well, it's 10 a.m.
No, you're taping in the morning, though.
That's a bit much. And for her, she's on the verge of having a baby, so this is a soft launch.
This is what I was going to say. I mean, Victorino, you've got to be drinking for two.
I do. She made a joke about like possibly like having the contractions and then giving birth in the office, but that's fine. We got paper towels, and Sonny remembers we got those plastic knives from Staples. Those are good, and bottled water. I think that's all.
Just in case you have to cut her open.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the umbilical cord. Oh, I could do a C-section. That's true.
Just in case you gotta get in there.
She's
and
very
really
pregnant, but you know
get
what?
Your hands in
she,
there.
She feels like we've got at least 6 or 8 episodes in before this happens. But she says she just wanted to get it out there because, as you know, that's how Mary Catherine is, and just see what happens and see what the reaction is like. So if people like sort of, you know, feeling good, I think. Assuming that, you know, we have sort of like share similar thoughts as she does and as I have, then, you know, that's the kind of thing. If you find it upsetting, don't listen to it. But, you know, I love her and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Is that code for something?
No, just like we're talking about news and I rarely talk about news. But, you know, she'll, you know, that's it's one of those things.
Oh, if you want to find out what I think, you don't want to. The thing is, you really don't want to know what I think about these things. So that's that. And other than Sonny, did you have anything? I'm sorry. Other than
you skipped right over.
I know
me.
We totally. Well, JVL got all upset.
Nobody ever wants
JVL
to talk to me.
JVL got all upset about the grading system at UVA.
Yeah, we've heard enough. We've heard enough from you.
Is there anything else? You probably have something else.
I went to REI today.
Ooh. Oh yeah.
I knew that would get JVL
that's
back.
A store that I drive by.
It just went from 6 to midnight. Yeah. Over there.
What'd you get there, big guy?
So my lovely daughter is going on a camping trip. It's dads and daughters. Mm. It's dads and daughters camping at the YMCA campground in like it's like 2 hours north
camp?
Of here. I have to camp. This is why I went to REI.
Pictures.
It's because I had to buy a sleeping bag. Oh, did you know I don't own a sleep? Well, luckily it's like in cabins. There's no tents.
Okay. All right.
Or anything like that. But I did have to buy a sleeping bag because they have like bunks, but they're not really, you know.
I can't believe you did this without calling me first.
So I pulled up the REI app and I was like, sleeping bags. Okay, I'm going to look at the sleeping bags. And I'm looking at these sleeping bags and my eyes are getting bigger and bigger. And I'm like, I'm going to use this once a year, maybe in my life. And I went to the tab and I said, sort by lowest price. That's all. That's exact. So I sorted by lowest price.
It's like thin as a sheet. Basically, you're sleeping on a sheet.
I sorted by lowest price. And here, let me just pull up what I got here. I'm trying
is it
to
a Coleman?
Actual...
You got yourself a Coleman, didn't you? Why not? Costco.
No,
just go
I got
to Costco
a,
and get whatever the $30 sleeping bag at Costco
I got,
is.
I got a Kelty. 30. A Kelty Katina.
What is the temperature 30. Rating on it?
30 degrees. It's 30 degrees or -1 Celsius.
Oh, that's
30
good.
Degrees or -1 Celsius.
Snug.
So here's what I didn't want. I didn't want one of those like ridiculous mummy ones that are like shaped to your body and
yeah,
you like your
you
head like
mummy.
Sticks up at the top. I just wanted like a normal
rectangle.
Sleeping bag.
That's
yep.
weird.
I wanted a rectangle sleeping bag. So this one's rated for 30 degrees. I mean it's
which means 40 degrees, you know that.
It's gonna
right?
be it's gonna be in the 50s. I'm not too worried about it. And again, we're indoors. We're not in tents.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like there's
just,
it's
you
like
put the sleeping bag on
fine.
Whatever bed structure
it's
they
fine.
Have inside a cabin.
Exactly. So anyway, I get this. I go to the store. I get the thing that I saw on my phone that they said they had, and I take it to the front, and she's like, are you an REI member? And I'm like, no, I'm not an REI member. Well, you should sign up. It's only $20. I was like, I'd rather die. And she's like, oh, okay. So she scans my thing. She scans it, and she says, okay, that's going to be $126. And I'm like, what? I want the $50 one of these. And she's like, no, sir, this is the $126 one. And I was like, take it back. And I walked away from the counter. I walked away from the counter and I went back to the thing and I started looking at I looked at my phone again and I was like, oh wait, that's the Kelty Galaxy something rated for -5,000 degrees. I don't want that one. I want the cheap one. I want the Kelty Katina or whatever it is. And I like go, I just start throwing things out of the bin. I'm like, no, where's the correct one? And I found it. There was one left. And I took it back to the front. And I was like, here you go. And she said, oh, you found the cheap one. I said, yes. Yes, I did. And that was my adventure at REI today. That was my adventure at REI.
Did you get a sleeping pad?
No, I don't need one of those.
Are you sure?
I mean, it's just like
is
it's
a sleeping
like
pad
these,
like underneath you, or is it like a pillow
have,
thing? What are we talking about?
They have mattresses at this thing, but they're supposedly okay. not super comfortable. So it's like whatever, it's fine. It's gonna be. I'm gonna bring like 6 body pillows so I can just roll around on top of them and like whichever way I need to be more comfortable. That's how I'm gonna do
just
it.
Just go get a sleeping pad.
Absolutely. I'm so never setting foot back in that fucking REI. I'm never gonna do it. They tried to screw me. They put the $120 sleeping bag in the $50 cubicle, and they just assumed I would go with it. And usually they would be right because I am a lazy man. I'm a lazy, lazy man. But this time I said no. I said no, REI. I am not playing. I'm not falling for your games. I'm going to get the cheap one. Getting the cheap one, and I got the cheap one, and I left.
If you
I'll let you guys know
death,
how comfortable it is.
If you freeze to death, you will deserve it.
Well, I'm not going to freeze to death because, again, it's going to be like 50 degrees this whole weekend. Like, it's not going to be cold.
You know and what? If I maybe, freeze, maybe if I freeze to one of those Houston weather snaps where there's a whoa.
If I freeze to death, if I get the sweet oblivion of death on this trip, it'll be worth it. It'll have been worth my $50 to have received the sweet, merciful release into the cold, gray ether.
Sonny,
I can't wait for you camping. It's going to be amazing.
Sonny, just remember, it's no time to die. But right now, sorry, speaking of which, over the weekend, I had a different one, but we're now at 23 minutes, so forget about my transition. Don't eat any of those, don't eat any of the plants. Some of them are poisonous. Speaking of which, over the weekend, No Time to Die shot its way to the top of the box office with $55.2 million. Followed by Venom, Let There Be Carnage with $31.8 million. And in third place, The Addams Family 2 again with $10.1 million. $10.1 million, seriously. Box office thoughts.
No Time to Die is... Look, there are a couple different ways to spin that number.
Yeah.
And the way that all of the industry trade magazines are spinning it is... Look, James Bond movies, the audience skews older. Older audiences don't come to the opening weekend. This is the fourth best Bond opening of all time. How can you say that's a bad number? 55.2 million, if it does a multiple of four, that gets it to 220, and that's fine for the pandemic. All of those things are true-ish, and like if the multiple is a four, if it does four times the opening weekend. That is not a huge downturn. The other big thing is that the international box office on this is very good. It's already over 300 million worldwide, which is a strong number for this movie. It doesn't open in China until not this weekend,
well,
but next
a strong
weekend.
Number, not counting China, you sure?
So, I mean, look, there are like positives to this, but 55.2 million is a very soft opening. Yes, it's the fourth highest opening for a Bond movie ever, but it is out of the last four Bond movies that have opened, this is the worst. So like it is
of Daniel Craig. That's interesting.
Of the Daniel Craig. So I mean, it did better than Casino Royale, but Casino Royale had been hampered by the last couple of Pierce Brosnan ones that were not very good. No. So you know, people were kind of like, do we want to do? You know, I don't know if we want to do more Bonds. But this is just a soft number. And like one way you can just look at the softness by how the number tracked down over the weekend. You know, the initial estimates, the predictions were like between 60 and 65. The initial number comes in on Friday. It's about 60. And then by Sunday evening, the actual is 55.2. I mean, it just tracked down all weekend. And this is unlike Venom, which tracked up all weekend, which tracked from a $60 million opening to an $80 million opening to a $90 million opening.
This is the inverse.
That went up. This was the inverse. And people weren't super excited about it. Again, lots of different ways you could spin this. It's a movie that's almost 3 hours long, with more than 3 hours long with previews and stuff, right? So there are fewer show times. It's a series that skews older. Older audiences don't show up opening weekend. It's like I can spin this several different ways, but the bottom line is 55.2 is soft. It's soft. Now we'll see how it holds. It's the only movie of this sort that is exclusive to theaters for the next month till Eternals drops. So maybe it'll hold pretty well.
Till the what drops?
I don't know. The Eternals, Eternals.
I thought you said the Turtles.
The MCU's Eternals, yes. featuring characters like Kingo. There's a Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah.
His character's name is Kingo.
I will say, you know, whereas there are a number of these other, like Shang-Chi and the DC Marvel, the DC Comics movies that I'd seen recently, like Suicide Squad, that I'm not familiar with any of them. I vaguely recall an Eternals comic book, like when you go through like comic books at a store, you would come across them. Am I right or no? I mean, were
yeah,
they,
it was like know, a, there was a big Jack Kirby. This is a Jack Kirby title.
It was a thing about her eyes being white. I remember the eyes being white. So,
I was not an Eternals reader. JBL, were you?
No. Everything Jack Kirby did without Stan Lee was trash.
And everything Stan Lee did without Jack Kirby was trash.
That's true. It's pretty impressive. Spider-Man was without Jack Kirby.
Well, I'm sorry. Everything that Stan Lee did after like 1968 was trash.
Right. Yeah, probably. That's closer to the truth. Although he's still writing her. This is, whatever. We don't need to get into Jack Kirby stuff. We're going along. We had a lot of Bond talk to do.
Yeah. Okay. So, yes, that's right. This week we are talking about the number one movie, No Time to Die, starring Daniel Craig. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
No Time to Die, the fifth and final adventure in the Daniel Craig James Bond movies. Could have been retitled The James Bond Rises.
Oh, my God. I have that written in my notes.
Oh,
but I have it written as The Dark Bond Rises.
The Dark Bond Rises, yeah.
Because he is the Dark Bond.
It is. The Dark Bond Rises. That's better. That's better. So the this picks up right where Spectre left off. James Bond is off on what amounts to a honeymoon with Madeline, played by the lovely Lea Seydoux.
Yeah, Victorino, are you familiar with her work?
Parts of it.
She was in a French movie.
It was a French comic book movie. A French comic book movie based on a graphic novel.
Something about warm colors. I forget.
That's
anyway,
it. Yeah.
Yes. The movie's about 15 minutes long. Go ahead.
So he is... It was a short. It was a short feature. Short foreign.
Yeah,
dominated the foreign short category at the Oscars.
On Daily Motion.
Picks up right where Spectre left off.
Stuff I can't do on the other show, by the way, but go ahead.
I don't know. I bet Mary Catherine would be amused.
We actually did a couple of, like, where we had to stop the tape because I would say, you know, it's something about, like let's take it from the back end or something like that, and I couldn't resist, you know, stuff like that. Okay, please, continue. Sorry.
To cement his relationship with Madeline, he has to go and say goodbye to Eva Green's character. What's her name? Vesper Lind.
Who was only 26 in Casino Royale, evidently.
Yeah. That's actually, it's not far off.
Or maybe 25 in Casino Royale.
Yeah, she's like 40. What, she's like 42 now, something like that. That seems about right. And gets blown up by Spectre. They leave a calling card. And did Madeline set him up? Who knows? But he says goodbye to her. He kicks her to the curb after fleeing from the bad guys and Spectre. And then disappears for 5 years to a tropical island, which is kind of a motif with these James Bond movies. He does this a lot, where Daniel Craig will just disappear to an island for 5 years and then show up again. He's like, hey, all right, I'm back. I'm back in the game. But when he comes back this time, there's a new Bond, a new 007. Lashana Lynch has taken over his number at MI6 and is trying to track down a terrible poison that has been stolen by some Russian scientists and a voice... we learn is Safin. We'll talk about him in a minute.
Marat Safin?
What? I kept like thinking this in my head. Oh, it's Marat Safin. Not people who don't watch tennis don't, but he is a famous tennis player and
very bad temper could actually become a Bond villain.
He could very easily. The action moves to Cuba. And there's a delightful set piece with Ana de Armas. The highlight of the entire movie is the 20 minutes that this movie spends in Cuba with Ana de Armas.
JBL, your eyes
Daniel
are closed.
Craig.
They're pitched closed. What is going on over there?
It is just she brings an exuberance to the role. She brings a wide-eyed innocence to the role. She brings a fantastic
stop it, Sonny. Stop talking. Just gotta
fantastic
stop talking.
Cocktail dress to the and she can shoot a machine gun. With the best of them. I love it. I love it. Ana de Armas is the peak of the mountain right now. Just the absolute number one.
I just want to say that dress is the best costume choice I have seen in a movie.
Yes.
Since
the end, period.
The Cinderella remake, where they put the girl from... The girl from Downton Abbey, who you love, Lily James.
Oh, that one,
in,
that
like,
one,
this,
that one.
This
yes,
blue
yes, yes.
dress
James,
of almost
Lily
like
James,
a...
Well,
the dress itself was almost like a special effect. The Ana de Armas cocktail dress was a special effect.
A special effect on me.
So please continue. after that, we learn in the midst of all this that Safin and his Russian scientist friend have essentially created a disease with nanobots that will only attack people if they have the right DNA coded into the disease. So blah blah blah. Long story short, Safin wipes out Spectre, and for the rest of the movie, James Bond is trying to track down Safin and this spy to reclaim this terrible disease. In the midst of all this, he reunites with Madeline. They go off. We find out that James Bond has had a kid, and he has to go to a poison island.
Do we find out that he has had a kid?
Yeah, that's definitely his kid. So we then go to a poison island. It's just a poison island. It's an island of poisons. And James Bond gets blown up by missiles to save the world. But also,
wait a minute.
Save his daughter.
Spoiler alert.
Save his daughter. Save his daughter's life because he's been infected by the disease. So I've told you the whole movie. And as I said, this is almost beat for beat The Dark Knight Rises. I mean, it is
with
almost the exact...
Of,
it is,
yes.
It is almost the exact yeah. same movie.
The only honestly, thing different would be if Q were at a cafe sometime later,
well,
and then he
so
sees
this
them
is,
there.
So this is the big difference, is that whereas The Dark Knight Rises cops out at the end by having that shot of
he's in the jet.
Of Alfred
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
At the cafe, and he sees... There's an argument to be made that this is just Alfred seeing what he wants to see, except that doesn't track, because in a previous scene you see Lucius Fox talking about how somebody has fixed the autopilot. But that scene itself doesn't track, because earlier when Batman is flying out to the bay, you see Batman in
the cockpit.
The cockpit as it's going out to the bay. So there's like a whole series of like bullshit cop outs that like one on top of the like there are things that you could take out of this to make it all make sense. But with all of it in there, it doesn't make sense. This leaves no doubt. There is no doubt about what happens
right.
to James Bond in this movie. Incinerated by Merv missiles just raining
right,
down
he
on
was
him.
Vaporized like the end of Rogue One.
Vaporized.
And then
the end of
and
the
it
end
was Merv,
M
you're
and
right,
Money
they
Penny
were
get together and they read a passage from the Tale of Two
not
Cities.
It's not from the Tale of Two Cities,
I know.
But yes,
honestly, I sat there in the theater, literally, and at that moment when they started talking, I thought to myself, is he gonna say it's a far, far better thing? Are they really going to rip it off that hard?
But here's the thing. It worked. All of this worked for me. At the end of...
you're not a Bond guy.
The first time I watched The Dark Knight Rises, when it looks like Bruce Wayne has died, I teared up a little bit in the theaters. I was like, this is a heroic sacrifice. This is the thing that all men should aspire
yeah,
to makes right. me. And same thing here. When James Bond is destroyed, while he's got the little, he's got his daughter's little bunny looped through his belt. Ah, Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel.
In Dark Knight Rises, was it when Michael Caine, Alfred breaks down and says, "I'm sorry,
I failed you."
Is that when it got to you?
That is one of the moments that got to me at the end of that movie.
So many revelations on this episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, No Time to Die, and also The Dark Knight Rises.
We got a little bonus review there of that movie.
Victorino, JBL. How many times did you get up to go to the restroom during
this
film?
That usually that affects the grading. You know, it's like a huge demerit if I have to go use the bathroom.
My over under was going to be 1.5.
Oh, That's good. That's good. It almost was 2, but it was 1. It was 1, and it was so. I held out until he finally reunites with Madeline at the house
and meets the daughter.
So I figured while he's on his way there, I can quickly head out. But it happened to be a long, stream, if you will. I mean, I could have timed that one. It was like a minute and a half. I'm like, all right, already. What did I drink? You know, so I mean, this thing's going on. It feels forever. And then, you know, and then you rush back. And then I just sat in the back in one of the back seats. I didn't want to have to interrupt all the people in the middle aisle, as it were. So I just sat in the back and watched the rest of the movie there. Yes. So the answer is one. Could have been two, but it was one.
At the end of the movie, did you stop at the restroom on the way out?
That doesn't count. But no, I did it. I did it. I waited.
So that's the one and a half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would have been the one and a half. But no. I held. It was just a good old fashioned one, literally, until I got home. So I gave the plot a B. You know, it's a little hard to follow. But, you know, it's not the worst plot.
I want to hear this from Vic. I want to hear this from Vic. I was going to ask JBL this, but I actually want to hear this from Vic.
Yes.
Vic, explain to why Murat Safin wants to kill billions of people.
Sonny, I literally have it in the world. I literally have it under questions.
Okay.
And the question was, why were all those Spectre agents killed? Okay, that was my question. And then the next one is, what is...
See, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. Killing the Spectre agents.
Oh, that made sense.
Murat Safin coming off the floor of Wimbledon and being like, all right, I want to kill all these dickheads who have messed up my life. I get that. But then he's like, I want to kill another billion people who didn't cheer for me hard enough in the majors.
Oh, there's
and
that.
Like, all right, well,
okay,
I don't know.
There's that. But anyway, we'll get to that in a second. So that was my plot. I'll tell you, the F plot for a James Bond movie was The Living Daylights. That got a big fat F. Do you remember that one? There was a scene where they were in Afghanistan for some reason.
Snowboarded on a cello.
Yes. Oh, no, yes, it's the same one. See, it's the same one. And then there was also Morocco. And then there was Joe Don Baker at the end. It was so insane. Okay. So duration, unfortunately, gets a D because of the, you know, again, that's a long one. I came back. I'm like, what is Freddie Mercury doing here? You know, I'm just kidding. Action violence, though, I give it a special A++. I thought it was a lot of fun action and violence. Not a lot of blood, and I think that's a PG-13. I mean, it was not... After watching Squid Game, I'm, you know, when there's like the mom gets machine gunned, I'm like, I didn't see any blood. Sex nudity. Graded, speaking of a curve, I graded it on the PG-13 curve because it's PG-13. I guess an A++. I am in love. I am in love. Thank you, JVL. A++ for sex nudity for PG-13. I am in 2021, that Ana de Armas...
By that scale, The Little Mermaid, as a G movie, is an A++++ because of those shells.
We're not...
Am I right, Victorino?
With the placement of the shells? We're not talking about that movie today, JVL.
Oh, okay.
But the other hot thing... There were so many hot things, but... Yeah, that's right, bonus. The other hot things about the Ana de Armas fight sequence with James Bond in Cuba is, first of all, the eagerness. She's so bubbly, right? Because she's like,
yes.
You know, she's fresh. She's not jaded yet by, I've killed so many people.
3 weeks of training.
3 weeks of training, right? So she's so, and there's no catch to it. It's not like, oh, and secretly, not like the guy, not like the Billy Magnuson's character, who is the State Department guy.
The Mormon, Book of Mormon.
Yes. So, no, not at all. So what you see is what you get with her. And the other great thing is what I loved, what turned me on the most was they shoot, they meet up, they take a drink, shoot, take a shot. Ah, I loved it. You know, they were drinking there. It was like, this is who you want to hang out with.
That whole sequence is dynamite. And I'm like, it's the thing that is the closest in the whole five, like Daniel Craig movie set. It's the thing that is closest to like old Bond, I think. I'm not a huge fan of old Bond. I like this modern. I like Dark Knight Bond.
Yeah,
myself.
Yeah, me
but
too.
Like, I that whole sequence was just really well done. It was fabulous.
It was great. So beginning to end. So overall, I give it a B+. I have other thoughts, but JVL, what do you think?
You know,
did you like it as much as Sonny and I did?
I like it for a Bond movie. You know, it's by the standards of Bond movies, it's good. It's probably my second or third favorite of the Daniel Craig Bonds.
No.
Obviously, Casino Royale.
Like Casino Royale.
Definitely Casino Royale is far and away. I mean, Casino Royale is good as a movie, not just good for a Bond movie. And I'm the weirdo who likes Quantum of Solace.
I love
Skyfall.
I just do. Skyfall is like
my
favorite.
The problem with Quantum of Solace is that it's like a 100-minute epilogue.
yeah,
to
I like that.
Casino Royale. Burn. But Casino Royale already had like a 20-minute epilogue at the end of it. It
like
just feels totally extraneous.
But here's the thing. So I liked this in the theater, and I was there for the ride in the theater. But the minute I got out, not really the minute, the day after seeing it, I said 24 hours later, there were just things about it that weren't as good as they should have been. And the length, it isn't just that it's a long movie, it's a padded movie. We get probably 25 minutes of Daniel Craig running around on the Poison Island just shooting faceless henchmen, in which no plot points are being achieved, the story is not being moved forward. And because he's just shooting nameless, I mean, he might as well be Duke shooting different Cobra soldiers for all the peril that he is in. And so there are just no stakes to it. And so it's just wasted time, and it goes on for forever. Forever and ever and ever and ever. And he goes around this corner and shoots five guys. Then he goes around that corner and shoots five. Somebody throws a grenade. He throws a grenade back. And it just, that bugged me a little bit. I was really bothered by the new 007 because they bring the Shauna Lynch. So I liked her. I liked the idea of a new 007, except that the story treats her as a second class agent in that she can't do anything right on her own. So she goes to Cuba competing with Bond to get the Russian scientist. Bond finds the scientist first. She snatches the Russian scientist from Bond, but then Bond snatches him back. Once they get together and are teammates back working for MI6 again, she is tasked with finding the rogue fake CIA agent, and she can't do that without his help. He's the one who has to tell her to do it. Then in the showdown to get the guy, she's not even there. He kills the rogue CIA, Ash, you know, the Book of Mormon guy. He has to kill him because she fails at her mission to find him and kill him. And then when they get to the island together, they're together for about 45 seconds. And then she is like shunted off to the side. And so there is no point does she feel like the character just feels, at that point, don't have the character, right? I mean, and this happens again and again in the movie with everybody else around Bond. And it's the first Bond movie I can think of where his supporting cast has no answers and nothing to give. M has nothing. M does nothing but make mistakes and not know what to do. Q doesn't really do anything. You know, Q doesn't find anything. He unlocks a hard drive in 5 seconds, and then he can't get through on the radio for the last 45 minutes. He just sits there. I can't reach him. And so it's weird in the movie that nobody has any answers except for Bond himself. And that's, I don't know, I found it almost distracting after the fact, because it means that none of the other characters are being paid off. And so why have them? Does that make sense?
I didn't notice it at all.
Okay. I'm not shocked.
I enjoyed the action.
So I would, there are two different interpretations here. One could say that, of course, it's not like they can do it for him. James Bond has to do it. It is a James Bond movie after all, right? Like Q does the things he is supposed to do. He provides little technological tricks and that sort of thing. M sets him on the mission, but cannot do the mission for him. And indeed, this leads me to like the second interpretation here, which is that like James Bond, my co-host Alyssa on Across the Movie Aisle made this argument, I think relatively persuasively, but like this represents the kind of end of empire James Bond, that MI6 is exhausted and fairly useless at this point, and that James Bond ends up paying the ultimate price for all of their failures. I mean, what is the actual plot of this movie? The actual plot of this movie is that the Brits created a horrible disease that, if it were to get into the wrong hands or out into the real world, would kill billions. And in order to solve the problem that MI6 has itself created, and that M specifically has created, James Bond has to die. James Bond, the ultimate super soldier, the ultimate, you know, apparatchik, the ultimate weapon of Her Majesty's Secret Service, is the one who, at the end of the day, ends up paying the price for all of the institutional failures that have preceded him.
Yeah, I can buy that. That said, I am bothered by what turn out to be extraneous characters. Again, all in service of the length, right? This is if you don't need characters, then don't have them in it. And so we don't need all of these characters except as like name checks. And for the new 007, movie would have been better off without that character if the character isn't provided interesting things to do that advance the story in some way. And I don't think new 007 does that. And the other thing, you know, the Murat Safin thing, the motives of Bond villains are almost always obscure and stupid. What bothered me so much about his second half motives is that his first half motives are so clearly defined and understandable.
Yeah, from the very beginning of the movie.
Perfect.
Yes. And so, the jarring of, you know, that first half, we're like, hey, I get this. I understand why he wants to kill, has gone on this elaborate thing to kill these people. That's
He's the flip side of the Bond coin. He is doing everything that Bond would do if he had the, you know, if he was off the leash.
And so that second half then just sort of falls apart for me story-wise because...
There's no explanation. Yeah. And like part of me, there's a very vain part of me. Do you remember when the stories about when people first started talking about No Time to Die and the villain, they said he was an insane environmentalist, that he wanted to depopulate the earth. There's a very vain part of me that thinks that at some point someone in the production was like, oh shit, somebody has highlighted that all of these villains are environmentalists and keep talking about how they make great villains, and like, we can't have that here, so we're just going to take it away. We're just going to eliminate his entire reason for doing what he's doing.
He does give a different explanation in the second half, which is, what does he say about people wanting to be controlled, right? He talks about that.
Yeah, it's all a mishmash, which is new because it
has nothing to do with avenging his family being killed.
Yeah, it's all a mishmash. And anyway, so that stuff bothered me after the fact. I was there for the ride. It's the first Bond I can really remember being struck by the principal photography. Oh, but it was actually shot like a nice movie.
What about Skyfall?
Yeah, I like that too.
Skyfall left me cold. Everything about Skyfall left me cold.
And I love Ralph Fiennes.
I mean, just the look of it, mm-hmm. though. I mean, I watched all of these movies again. I bought the 4K set, and I just watched them one after the other ahead of No Time to Die. And I will say that, like, Casino Royale looks good in a sort of like post-Bourne action movie sort of way. There's some shaky cam, but it's not overdone. It's just like very well done, it's very competent. The opening black and white sequence looks really good. Everything else is just like okay. But Skyfall was shot by Roger Deakins and like is just like it is a beautifully photographed film.
I have to look at it again. I only saw it once. It was in the theaters, and I hated everything about it. So
really?
I loved it.
I loved his quote of which
it's interesting that you hate Skyfall.
When Judy Dench is there before the panel, the commission, and she's quoting her husband, the quote, I think, from Tennyson, and then he's running to save the day, and then Ralph Fiennes finally gets in on the action as well. I liked all that stuff. And I loved the villain in that, particularly when he faces off with Judy Dench and he takes off his prosthetic. I love that. I was like,
It's interesting that you hate Skyfall, a.k.a. the Dark Knight of the Bond, sequence.
Skyfall was the moment when all of a sudden we were back to the old preposterous Bond.
Well, this is.
It's a heritage movie.
Well, but I wanted to ask you about. So here's the big problem with these five movies, as I see it, is that they are 100% at war with each other. The first two films are very consciously a deconstruction of the Bond thing. Right.
Bond gets like, hurt. Bond bleeds.
To the point where you have James Bond and Vesper Lynn making a money penny joke. Remember. He says, you're the money. And she says, every penny of it. We're like, oh, money penny. Oh, it's very funny. It's very clever. And a bartender asks him, do you want that martini shaken or stirred? And he's like, do I look like I give a damn? Like, it's very explicitly trying to break down all of these Bond tics. And Quantum of Solace continues that a little bit. And then Skyfall and Spectre and No Time to Die very self-consciously put you back in that Bond verse with Q, with you know, all of the with Moneypenny. Moneypenny is back. And like I didn't quite understand what they were going for, frankly. It just felt like the movies were in real tension with one another.
I think Quantum of Solace vastly underperformed, right? Casino Royale was people don't appreciate how out of left field it was, and people were shocked that a Bond movie could be like that. Right. I mean, it just rejuvenated the entire series and everybody's incredibly excited. Then Quantum of Solace comes out, just fell totally flat. And I think the Broccoli's decided we got to get back. And the other thing is, I don't think Craig, I mean, after Quantum of Solace, Craig was sort of not into it. Right. I mean, this, he sort of mails the performance in this. I mean, you could tell this is a guy who was dying to get off the production. He's so done with Bond throughout. There's very little charm in him. And I don't mean Bond charm. I just mean screen actor charm, where, you know, he's making you want to look at him on screen.
I disagree with that slightly, but I do want to just jump right back to the point about this being the dark. It is literally, again, it's the dark night of these movies. You have the villain, like, purposefully getting captured so he can wreak havoc and take out the head of the organization. You have like the big fight at the end where they're running around and, you know, kind of improvising the explosives and all that in the abandoned mansion.
Yeah.
I mean, it is structurally, it is like a very, very similar sort
Fair
of
enough.
Thing.
But it was, for me, that whole movie is exemplified by the little walk through the James Bond museum that they do. You know, it's like, oh, look at that. Remember when I used the crocodile submarine? Do you remember this? And he.
I don't remember that. Is that in Q's?
There's like the little lair and like.
I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're not thinking of the last Pierce Brosnan one with John?
John Cleese? It's possible. John Cleese. It's possible I am, but Q.
I forgot that he was Q.
The whole thing, it's fine. I liked it. I enjoyed the ride. I was annoyed that it could have been a really good movie, and I don't think it was.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I don't think it was.
During that fight scene at the end in the fortress, in the disputed islands, which is, you know, another great idea because that's a hot topic these days, but there's an actual scene where he does the gun, you know, where he's shooting and it looks like he's in the barrel, like the very opening. I don't know if you noticed that. And then the other thing is when he's the M portraits. Did you notice the M portraits?
I did.
But not just Judy Dench M, but the Robert Brown M.
Yeah.
The Robert Brown M from the Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton years.
I have a couple notes before we go. The first of which is, I don't know why this jumped out at me, but during the opening credits, I was shocked at how early in the opening credits Mr. Craig's personal hairstylist was. Mr. Craig's personal hairstylist is before the casting director.
You're watching the credits, the director, really?
No. The opening credits.
I didn't notice. Really?
And wow, when I saw that, I just thought to myself, he must be as much of a jackass to work with as everybody says. That he's insisting that his hairdresser billed this high.
Well, maybe it requires a lot of work on that hair.
But I have a quick question. Is it problematic that so many Bond villains are gay?
Well, we don't know that Blofeld or Safin is gay. The only one we know is gay from Skyfall.
Yeah, Javier Bardem was gay.
Yeah. He's gay.
Or at least bi.
the man, Monsieur Scaramanga, gay. Blofeld, gay. Oh, we don't gay. Know that. Max Zorin, gay.
Know. Oh, no, no. Max Zorin.
Prince Kamal Khan, gay, gay, gay. Dominic Green in Quantum, gay, gay, gay. I'm just saying, why is the Broccoli family so homophobic?
Zorin is with Grace Jones in A View to a Kill.
Yes, remember that. He's so into chicks that he liked getting pegged by Grace Jones.
Wow.
Well, that's how straight that guy was.
You might have been thinking, I didn't think about that at all. I do have questions. Yes. Who is Madeline's father? Blofeld.
No, Mr. White.
Mr. White. Yeah, Mr. White. From the, remember in the first two movies, Mr. White?
Oh, who he kills at the end?
Remember Mr. White kills the Le Chiffre?
Oh, yes.
And then he's in Quantum of Solace.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I thought he was killed by the Africans.
He gets shot in the leg at the end of Casino Royale.
Yeah, the Mr. White.
Oh, at the end. And he kills her father at the end of Casino Royale.
No, her father eventually kills himself. Because he wounds him and takes him prisoner. And then he escapes in the end of Quantum of Solace. And
His father kills himself... I'm sorry, her father kills himself in Spectre, and then remember, Blofeld shows him the security camera footage of him shooting himself.
I don't remember that. Okay. And I didn't, frankly, I forgot who Madeline was, because it's been so long since I'd seen Spectre. And
I watched all these movies last week.
I felt like it was just ages. I'm like, wait a minute, who is she, and what is the story? So that had me confused. What and why is she the therapist to Blofeld?
Reasons.
Okay, thank you. And what is Blofeld's connection to Safin? Does he know Safin? He knows Safin.
Spectre killed Safin's family.
To get the Poison Island or something.
To get the Poison Island. So now he is trying to take revenge.
Did I miss that when I was in the bathroom?
Yes. The reason Safin is disfigured is because there was poison gas on the Poison Island when Spectre attacked it, and he was the only survivor, but he looked like that.
All right.
And that's why he came to kill Mr. White in the very beginning and meets little baby Madeline.
Really? Okay.
You didn't realize that the guy at the beginning in the weird mask, that's Safin.
Oh, yeah, no, I knew that. Sorry, I thought you were talking about James. I got confused there for a second. I'm just looking at my notes. By the way, really quickly, it's two movies back-to-back with Billy Magnuson in it. Did you know that?
I did. Notice that. He is also in The Many Saints of Newark. He plays young Polly Walnuts.
Okay. That's it. I think we got to move on.
Can I give a JV. You know what? No, I have a ranking, but I will save it for outtakes.
Okay, good. Because I don't have any outtakes. That is all the time we're giving to the. Oh, corrections, shout outs, anything? We're good. Good.
Yeah.
That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments. Tweet us at SunnyBunch at Victory and Amatis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. Yes, JVL.
So I put together a little ranking of the top five Bonds who weren't.
So like people guys who could have been James Bond.
Because being James Bond is like being a Supreme Court justice. You can want to be a justice on the Supreme Court, but you can't ever plan for it as a career because it could be that just, you know, your age does not line up with when there's an opening to the court, right? If, you know, if you're too young or too old, you're not going to get it.
It's cosmic in some way.
Right. And so there are people who, some of these people are people who were considered for Bond roles. Some of them were people who did not get Bond roles because they were born in the wrong cycle.
Okay, so these are not your list, but actual.
No, this is my list.
Oh, your list.
My
list. Okay.
My list. Number five, Rupert Everett.
Oh, yeah. No, there was talk about
who was considered for a Bond back in the day, and I think he wanted to do it as a gay Bond. You know what? If you were going to do a gay Bond, Rupert Everett is the guy for it. Number four, Michael Gambon.
What? As a villain?
Who? No. Was asked by Cubby Broccoli to audition to replace George Lazenby.
Oh, back
after
in the day.
Broccoli saw Gambon in his film debut, because he was just a stage guy. His film debut was in Laurence Olivier's Othello, a movie much in the news.
It is much in the news.
Michael Gambon as Bond when he was like 30 years old would have been pretty amazing.
I need to see. I'll have to go into Google Images to see what he looked like, because all I can think of is like either Dumbledore or Layers.
You just think Dumbledore.
And that's really not going to. Okay.
I think the voiceover from Hail Caesar.
It's a great voiceover.
Number three, Tom Hardy, who, let's all be honest, should be the next Bond, but won't be. Mm-hmm. Number two, Chidiwe Ejiofor, who I think would have been a fantastic, fantastic Bond.
Did he die?
No. Oh. But he's too old. We had this discussion a few weeks ago when we did some terrible movie that he was in, and I made the case that he should be Bond, and Sonny argued he was too old for it, and upon further reflection, Sonny is always right. But number one, the guy who, again, just wrong age for it, but I think would have been a dynamite Bond, and I'm going to say this, and you're going to say yes, Colin Farrell.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Would he be an interesting Bond or what?
Irish accent. If you want to have an Irishman.
Yeah.
I think
if
he could.
Have a Mick.
He wouldn't be drinking a martini. He'd just be drinking a Guinness.
Yeah, he's just got some, you know, some Irish
and
whiskey there.
And a shepherd's pie.
And his coffee.
That's what he would do.
I'm sure it's fine.